the idea of the holodeck was I can walk up to, you know, a console, describe a scene or a place or an experience, you know, the doors open and magically I'm in that reality. And I can walk through it, I can interact with objects and people. That is something that is very feasible, and it's going to happen.
Welcome back to another episode of Silicon Valley Front Row. I'm David Lam, this is Steve Espas, and we're joined by Samir Kumar, co-founder and general partner at Turing Capital. And so, Steve, people are going to see the Star Trek background. Why do we have that for this episode?
Well, this is really the front row episode. You know, we have an expert, someone who knows about technology as much as anyone. Now, what I think it's important is that he invests in companies that he hopes to become successful. So he really knows what he's talking about. But yeah, Star Trek, you know, did you watch Star Trek when you were a kid?
Bits and pieces, okay. Sad to say.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the first, Star Trek IV, is one of the first movies I watched when I came to the U.S. in 1986.
Oh, really?
So I still remember, you know, almost the whole movie after like 40 years, right?
Wow.
So I guess one of the things that comes to mind, Samir, is the technology that's in Star Trek. And we're in the Silicon Valley, probably the center of the world where things happen technology-wise. We kind of want to get a sense from you, how close are we with some of these technologies as far as becoming reality?
Yeah, well, great to be with you, Steve and David, today on and talk about, you know, a show that's been an inspiration for me for going back to my childhood. But I will tell you, it's been a source of inspiration for many people in Silicon Valley, whether they're startup founders or, you know, leaders in industry. If you talk to many people, they will either be Star Trek fans today or will tell you stories about how they were inspired by Star Trek to pursue the careers, whether it was in science or engineering or building companies. And it, in some way, shape, or form, actually influenced them. So I think that's pretty exciting. Now, I think that because it was a show that inspired so many people with its vision of the future, technological progress, exploration, the pioneering human spirit, there's different parts of it, right? If you think about engineering, the idea of a warp drive, the ability to travel to the stars, you know, in a way that we today can't even imagine would be possible.
The warp drive is one of my favorites,
right?
For sure.
And I think the rules of general relativity, of this idea of the speed of light is a hard limit. Today, all of the experimental data that we have, all of the physics of the world that we know seems to conform to that. But I think the inspiration that came from the idea of a warp drive to be able to sidestep the rules of general relativity, I think that has inspired a lot of scientists and engineers to start exploring the idea of, if we were to ever go to the stars, what would it take? Is it possible to leap beyond general relativity without violating it? And that's the core idea of the warp drive. And so, you know, you can talk to people at NASA that have actually written serious research papers on this topic, have articulated what would be the architecture of a warp drive. And these are serious scientific papers. Of course, there's a bunch of assumptions, other capabilities that need to be manifested, like how we would be able to channel very, very, very large amounts of energy to be able to create things like a warp bubble, to be able to essentially have the benefits of going faster than the speed of light, but still not violate general relativity. So I think these are interesting research ideas that are inspiring scientists. But if you think about all of the other technologies that were contemplated in Star Trek, some of those are real today. I would bet the first time, if you followed Star Trek, you came across the idea of a tablet that looked like an iPad.
Yeah.
It was probably in a Star Trek show, whether it was Star Trek The Next Generation, like you see back here, or the original series. And I think that is a real thing today that we take for granted, the idea of a smartphone. If you think about the idea of a tricorder, that has inspired people to pursue or have an XPRIZE type of competition to say, who can build the first device that is a remote sensing device that I can hold in my hand that starts to be in the direction of what was the vision for a tricorder. So these are two examples. If you think about something that is also becoming very real, the idea of universal translation, where you and I can speak different languages, but we can converse, we can exchange ideas and information in a very frictionless, seamless way. That idea is now starting to become more real than ever based on what we're seeing with AI, what we're seeing with AI hardware in the consumer electronics devices that we have. So I actually expect that reality to, you know, fully be realized in my lifetime. When I was watching that show, it was, wow, is that ever going to be possible? And it's starting to become possible. Now, other ideas like the food replicator, like the transporter, which would be incredible feats of accomplishment, those may still be further out in terms of our ability to manipulate matter at that scale and at that level of refinement. But the fundamental ideas behind it, you know, like the idea of quantum teleportation, we have done experiments to show, you know, at the very smallest scale, that the idea can be realized in physical experiments. Mm-hmm. So while there's a big gap from going from, you know, teleporting a photon or an electron to teleporting you from one place to another, the fundamental scientific concepts are based in some reality, based in physics that we understand. Yes. So it's not to say that, oh, it's just an engineering problem to scale it up, but the fundamental ideas are not fantasy. And I think we're starting to see evidence of that. Similarly, when we think about things like quantum computers, you know, the idea of quantum computing was actually introduced in Star Trek. And in terms of having this fantastical ability for the ability to solve problems or do things that, you know, even our best classical computers can't do today, those ideas were introduced in Star Trek.
Do we have quantum computers now that are actually at the level that they had in the movie?
No, we don't. No. But we have the ideas, the experiments, the beginnings of the substrates for how you would build a useful quantum computer. We have made a lot of progress in that area. When I was at M12, you know, I invested in PsiQuantum, which is a photonic quantum computing company. I still consider them to be one of the leaders in the field in terms of towards the goal of building a fault-tolerant, useful quantum computer in this decade. I think they are still in a leading position to be one of the first to accomplish that. And so I think we're making progress towards that end. But, you know, it's not like we have exactly what we saw in Star Trek as something that is possible today.
So of all the technology in Star Trek, what would you say were the closest to, I mean, besides the iPad, you know, like warp drive, hologram, you know, what's the closest to being made that's kind of at that?
Yeah, so you also mentioned holograms or holodecks. So I would say the two that are like, hey, this doesn't feel like science fiction. We're making progress and really big progress. So universal translation is one that we talked about. The other one is the holodeck. So if you think about the intersection of generative AI, mixed reality, the idea of world models and virtual worlds, these things are coming together for us to be able to generate like a synthetic immersive reality where, you know, right now it may be a headset that you put on, but when the headset is on, you feel like you're immersed in that world and you're able to experience that world and interact with it. And the idea of the holodeck was I can walk up to, you know, a console, describe a scene or a place or an experience, and then, you know, the doors open and magically I'm in that reality. That is not a crazy idea anymore. Maybe the first version of that will be I write a prompt and it generates a 3D virtual world that I experience in my MetaQuest or my Apple Vision Pro, and it's fully immersive. It's something that I came up with. It's not predefined. And I can walk through it. I can interact with objects and people. That is something that is very feasible and it's going to happen. And I think you can say, well, yeah, you still have to wear a headset, but it's not hard to imagine that at some point it could be room scale. It could be you are able to really suspend your belief in reality and have a room scale holodeck that starts to be in the direction of what was imagined in Star Trek. I think that's going to be really possible.
David, I think we talked about this in one of our early episodes when I asked the question, like, if you actually had this device, why would you, for example, travel to Europe or go on Mount Everest, the pyramids, or even on the moon? You can just be there instantaneously and experience that. Now, whether that's a good thing or not, that's a different story. But I want to go back to the Universal Translator. I remember many years ago, I did a trip to Cuba. And the people we stayed with, it's a family. We didn't stay in a hotel, it's a family. They spoke no English at all, right? So I had to communicate with them, this is many years ago, with a dictionary. I had a dictionary and look up every word. So obviously this translator would have been helpful. However, at the end of that week, my Spanish improved so much that after that I was able to, like, you know, not fluently, but I can communicate with people pretty well. So I think that's always a downside, right? The downside is that you get all these tools, it kind of makes you a little bit lazier, right, in so many ways.
I mean, you could, like, if you think about, you know, today, and if you, it's hard to imagine now a time when we all didn't have, you know, Google Maps or Apple Maps, and we couldn't just put in and just navigate to from point A to point B. But there was a time when you had to make an effort. You know, maybe first it was MapQuest and you had to put in your directions, print them out and keep them with you. Go back further, it was a Rand McNally actual map that you had to pull out and you had to navigate that way. I think overall it's been a positive that we have removed the friction for people to be able to effectively navigate from point A to point B, find the things that they need to find. Now, you could argue that maybe the mental muscle of how you do, you know, spatial orientation, spatial navigation has atrophied in some people that don't even think and just, you know, say, okay, just put the destination in.
Yes.
So there are pros and cons of you know, how much you use a new capability and when you use it. I could use the same argument about, you know, log tables and calculators, right? Yes. We're not all, you know, getting on a blackboard with a slide rule and trying to figure out what the logarithm of something is. Yes. Or looking at a log table, we use our calculator. But we're hopefully able to use the mental capacity for other tasks that are higher order tasks while we are able to delegate certain functionality to a new kind of automation or a new kind of technology that makes, you know, a process that was tedious much easier.
So Star Trek was like basically an American, it reshaped American sci-fi culture, like, yes, ever since 1966, when it came out. So Steve, like, what do you think about a show that old still making inspiring, like, different shows like Star Wars and even new versions of Star Trek movies?
That's actually a good point. The fact that whoever came up with those scripts and produced the movie had things in mind that apply today or even in the future.
Yeah.
And on a realistic scale. Like, I can't stop thinking about Back to the Future. And, you know, in that movie, they're 1985 and then they have this vision of 2015 with the flying cars. Well, I just interviewed someone who's building a flying car, but he's off by quite a few years. And even if it makes it, it's not yet there by any means. But yes, it's pretty amazing. Whoever had that inspiration to do it, you know, hats down to them, you know.
Right. So, like, if, say, the warp drive becomes possible, right, and then they meet, you know, we're able to go to other planets or other galaxies. I mean, I guess since you're more of a Star Trek expert, you know what the writers or person was kind of getting their inspiration from, kind of like interplanetary exploration?
I think it's basically, you know, if you think about the pioneering spirit in humans, exploration, curiosity-driven exploration, you're basically taking that and, in the 60s, you're transposing that to space exploration versus, you know, I think we could say, look, if you were to go back hundreds of years, you could say, well, it was about exploring the planet, you know, being on the high seas, finding parts of the world that were not on maps, finding ways to get from point A to point B or meeting new cultures. This is a version of that, except now the frame of reference is the entire galaxy versus a single planet. Mm-hmm. And so I think the thing to recognize there is that as we advance as a civilization, we are reframing the fundamental human instincts into a larger framework. So instead of saying, well, I'm looking at someone living in this country or that country or from this culture or that culture as being so different than me, and that's alien, to saying, well, we're all human, and now we're looking outward, and we're starting to look at other civilizations, other forms of intelligent life. But to Star Trek's credit, having this positive, optimistic vision, the United Federation of Planets, where we do collaborate with others and we do form alliances with others, but now those alliances are across, you know, planetary civilizations in other parts of the galaxy versus, you know, focusing just on, you know, which humans are like me or less like me or more like me. So I think the core inspiration was to present an optimistic vision of the best of humanity. What can we accomplish when we set out to have, you know, optimistic goals, positive goals? What could we do with scientific breakthroughs that would remove some of the more negative tendencies that we have today, or things that are very self-serving. So that's kind of how I look at, you know, what was Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, what was the message that he wanted to create? What was the stories he wanted to tell? And both the original Star Trek and then all of the other subsequent series and movies that came out of it.
So I wonder, do you face a dilemma when you are about to invest in a company? Do you face a dilemma of investing in something that may have to do with technologies that are maybe similar to Star Trek, but will not bring a lot of revenue, at least in the short term, versus something that could be addicting or, you know, something that you know is going to have a good revenue, but may not have like the effect that, you know, you wish it did?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the seductive potential of like this amazing transformative technology or research, but you're like, I don't know what the real business is, versus, wow, there's a very real business here. But if I were to fast forward 10, 15, 20 years in the future, how much will this be relevant, or will this be 10x bigger, or will it be something that like went down in time because it's not as relevant? You do think about that. Of course, I want both. You want to invest in things where you're like, I look at this, this is a very hard problem, but the relevance of this problem is only getting bigger in the future. And while, you know, they have to still think about what is the ultimate business model that they will pursue to make revenue, if they solve or have a breakthrough, it will be transformative. And it's, in some cases, if, and especially if you're doing, let's say, deep tech investing, you're able to get comfortable to say, you know, we may not have the exact business model at this time, but this will be such a fundamental breakthrough that they could explore lots of different business models and therefore have many different paths to monetization. So we do also look at companies like that. I think in touring, because we are investing primarily at what's called the early growth phase, which is Series B and Series C companies, there, of course, you do want to see evidence of a business model, of repeatability in how you're acquiring revenue, some evidence of product market fit. But as a technology enthusiast,
at heart,
for example, my investment in Cusp AI, which is an AI for material science company, that was in part inspired by Star Trek. If you watch Star Trek IV, you remember when Scotty and Dr. McCoy went into that facility where they were making aluminum.
Yes, and he gave him the formula.
He gave him the formula for transparent aluminum.
It is, how do you know he wouldn't have guessed it anyway?
That's right.
You know, later.
But imagine if we had a material science breakthrough where something with the capabilities of aluminum, the weight of aluminum, but see-through. Like, how transformative would that be in so many of the products and service devices or vehicles that we create? Right. So to me, when I invest in AI for material science, it is in some way inspired by that. It's not to say like, oh, well, this company is going to figure out how to make transparent aluminum in the next 5 years. But they're laying the foundation for how we are able to explore coming up with novel materials that meet certain requirements, that is not just based on trial and error, not just based on tedious ongoing trial and error and experiments, which sometimes are very inefficient. But now coming up with a way where AI can help you explore the design space much more efficiently, come up with novel formulations, novel designer materials that you could have never imagined yourself, even as a material scientist. To me, that is in the direction of the kinds of breakthroughs that at some point we may get, like some exotic material that we didn't imagine that will have these capabilities that will unlock, you know, new kinds of products and new kinds of engineering capabilities.
Samir, thank you for your time. I think we have some questions for the audience, right?
Yeah, of course. Do you want to start?
Well, the first question is, what would you like to ask Samir about technologies that he's investing in that I think are most relevant for what we need today?
And of all these sci-fi technology, what's one of your favorite and which would you like to have come to reality? So let us know in the comments.